Alright. Daniel chapter 7, part 2.
Woo!
No.
So you remember from last week, the switch from narrative genre to what some would call apocalyptic genre.
Which you don't like to call it an
apocalyptic genre. Yeah, I just treat it as prophecy. It just happens to be prophecy that's interpreted by an angel and deals with end times, but...
reading any differently than any other text.
Exactly. Yeah. Apply the same hermeneutic. It just means you have to interpret a whole lot more metaphors and symbols than usual, because a whole lot more metaphors and symbols are used. Intentionally so. So, somebody summarized the vision for me that he had.
There's a dinosaur, a lion, a bear, and... a leopard.
No, not in that order.
Yeah. I think the leopard had its wings clipped off.
Lion.
The lion did. The leopard had four heads.
Right.
Yeah.
And the bear had ribs in its mouth.
Yeah.
And then the dinosaur had a bunch of horns, like 10 horns or something like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then one tiny horn that spoke.
Right. And it cut off three of the first 10. And it spoke blasphemies against the Most High. Yeah. And then, okay, so after this vision of the four beasts, first the lion, then the bear, then the leopard, then the dinosaur, the beast.
The court convenes.
The court convenes, right. Ancient of Days sits on his throne. He condemns the little horn. And... then the court scene moves forward a little bit, and we see which character. Verse 13.
Anybody? Isn't it just the angel that explains it to him?
Not yet.
One like the Son of Man?
Yeah, one like the Son of Man.
Squirrel?
He joins in this scene. Goes up to the Ancient of Days, and what's given to the Son of Man? Or the one like the Son of Man?
The world?
Dominion.
Yeah. His kingdom. And what are the characteristics of this kingdom that we're trying to hammer home and recognize?
Everlasting.
That one.
Everlasting. Will not pass away, will not be destroyed.
Amen.
He's in control.
The King of Kings.
All right, and last week we talked through the first three beasts. What are the first three beasts? Who's the lion? Or what's the lion?
Is it the same as the statue?
Yeah.
It's Nebuchadnezzar.
Nebuchadnezzar, a.k.a. Babylon. The wings being plucked off would be his humbling experience, and him standing up, speaking, being given the mind of a man, or the heart of a man, would be his conversion experience, right? Mm-hmm. What's the bear?
Medio-Persian. And it's lopsided.
It's lopsided.
Either Medio or the Medians.
The Medes.
Were less dominant and it became Persian.
Exactly, yeah.
Or it's just the Medes and there was some other reason why it's lopsided.
Yeah. Yeah, they just don't explain why the common explanation for if it's just the Medes is that it's not lopsided so much as it's standing up ready to attack. And so the Medes were like attacking people.
It's not the same as lopsided.
Correct. The further support that it's Medo-Persia will be seen in chapter 8 with the ram with one horn that's longer that is specifically called Medo-Persia by the angel. But we'll get there. So yeah, lopsided bear, Medo-Persia, according to my interpretation, which we'll move forward with mine.
Yeah.
Because it'll get too complicated if I try to give you all of them.
Let's just assume you're right.
What's the leopard?
Greece,
yeah.
Alexander the Great and his four generals.
Right.
Or it's Persian.
The four heads. Or it's just Persia.
We're going to still go with your view.
Yeah, it's Greece.
We'll just go with
that. Again, chapter 8, when we get to the vision of chapter 8, really kind of clears up and hammers home.
Heads if it wasn't important.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like they wouldn't say it had ribs in its teeth if it wasn't important.
Why is
we
it
just
important?
Don't know.
Yeah.
We'll find out eventually.
Actually, I had another thought about that when I was doing my paper.
That's Walgreens quality for you.
Oh, yeah. I think that the three ribs are the, again, relate to chapter 8 with the ram. It's budding northward, eastward, and southward. And so those three directions are the three ribs. And it's like conquering in those three directions. But the three sides, that's what... Anyway. We'll get to that when we reach
out. That's funny. The
yeah.
three sides, like the three...
Ribs. Yeah, and that's the word in Aramaic, really, is more literally just sides. Same as it took from
three
Adam's
side.
Is... Yeah. So that's why I think it is.
That's cool.
So we got to the heavenly courtroom and we talked about the Ancient of Days and how it was a unique name for God. And we looked briefly at Revelation 5 with the thousands upon thousands, myriads upon myriads. And we looked briefly at Revelation 20 with the books. And that's where we finished, talking about the Book of Life and the books and the Great White Throne Judgment described in Revelation 20. And we saw how it was the exact same language used in this little thing about the Ancient of Days as there is in Revelation 20, absolute end of time sort of stuff, okay? That's where we left off. Now, moving forward, let's reread verses 11 through 14, so we remember the context. So right after the books are opened in Daniel, what does Daniel see? Verse 11.
Then I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words which the horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain, and its body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, and an extension of life was granted to them for an appointed period of time. Keep going.
Yeah, verse 14.
I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a son of man was coming. And he came up to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him, and to him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one which will never, ever, ever be destroyed.
Nice.
That was in the text.
Yeah.
Emphasis added.
Alright, what did we see? Let's jump over the little horn, because we're going to come back to that. What did the Son of Man get?
A kingdom.
Authority to rule, glory, and kingdom.
Okay, and
how
did
he... Of all peoples, nation, and language groups.
And how did he show up?
On a cloud.
On a cloud.
With
yeah.
the clouds.
On a boat.
Yeah, that's one.
Let's go look at, in the New Testament.
Uh-oh.
Flip over to Mark 14 real quick.
Dang, I should have brought that New Testament.
You said Mark 14?
Yeah. This is near the end of Mark. As Peter, as Jesus has already been betrayed in the garden, he's been grabbed, taken to before the Sanhedrin, he's about to be crucified, right? He's still in the whole trial section of the narrative. Verse 53. So this is right after leaving the garden. They led Jesus to the high priest, and all the chief priests and the elders and the scribes came together, and Peter had followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest. He was sitting with the guards, warming himself at the fire. Now the chief priests and the whole council were seeking testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but they found none. For many bore false witness against him, but their testimonies did not agree. Some stood up and bore false witness against him, saying, "We heard him say, 'I will destroy this temple that is made with hands, and in 3 days I will build another one not made with hands.'" Now we know from John that he's talking about the temple of his body when he said that. But
Yet even about this testimony they did not agree. And the high priest stood up in the midst of them and asked Jesus, "Have you no answer to make? What is it that these men testify against you?" But he remained silent and made no answer. The high priest asked him, "Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed?" The parallel versions in Matthew and Luke say, "Are you the Christ, the Son of God?" Right. The Blessed is a synonym, euphemism for God. Jesus said, "Ego eimi," which means, "I am."
I want a waffle.
I know, I always think of that. "I am." Does that remind you of anything, first of all, just that phrase?
Moses.
Yeah, right.
With Barney Bush. Or that's his name, when he said, who should I say is I'm speaking on behalf of? He said, "I am."
I am. Covenant name of God. The most revered name of God. Jews, when they're copying the Bible, the Old Testament, they got to stop and wash their hands before they write the name Yahweh, "I am." And wash their hands again after they write it. It shows up like 6,000 times in the book. So
they had to change writing utensils too.
Very important name. Yeah. Yes. He says, "I am." And then he says this, "And you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming with the clouds of heaven." And the high priest tore his garments and said, "What further witness do we need? You have heard his blasphemy. What is your decision?" All right. What did he just claim?
He's the Son of God.
What else did he claim? What was the first part of the Pharisees' question?
"Are you the Christ?"
The Christ, the Son of God. All right. So the Christ, you guys know what Christ means, literally speaking?
No, you've told us, but I don't remember.
Same as Messiah?
Same as Messiah. Messiah is the Hebrew word. Christ is the Greek word.
I don't remember.
It means anointed one.
That one.
Chosen one. We see this in Daniel chapter 9, so we'll get there. There's an anointed one who shows up. In Daniel chapter 7, everyone understood. The Son of Man, that's the anointed one. It's the same guy from Genesis 3:15, the seed who will crush the head of the serpent. It's the same guy who's promised to David and his descendants that he'll sit on his throne. This is the Christ, the Messiah, the anointed one, the one who's going to sit on the throne, rule as king. Get a kingdom. Daniel 7, right? Son of Man comes. He's anointed. This is what you do before you make someone king. You anoint their head with oil. And then they get a kingdom. So by claiming to be the Christ and the Son of God, and using the covenant name of God in his answer, Yahweh, "I am," and you will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds, seated at the right hand of power, he's saying, yes, I'm going to get my kingdom, I am king, I am God in flesh. To claim that a human being is God in flesh to the first century Jewish mind is utter blasphemy. God is too holy, too perfect to humble himself, to take on the form of a man. This is how the Jewish mind thinks. When they're looking for the Christ, they're looking for a human who's going to come and reign in a kingdom. They're not looking for God in flesh. So when God in flesh shows up and says, "No, I'm the same, one and the same," they don't know how to handle it. And this is what Paul spends 50% of his time hammering into the minds of the Jews who become Christians, is no. The Christ was God in flesh. You're saved by grace through faith. Those are his two big talking points, particularly in Philippians. So, looking at these two together, since we've seen the end of the story, we understand this what this passage became for the Jews, without getting at. This was the central text to know the Messiah. He's going to come on the clouds, he's going to get his kingdom, and he's going to establish his kingdom. This is why the Jews are looking for a king who's going to rule on earth, literally speaking, in the first coming. And when he comes and he doesn't do that, they're confused. And half of them don't believe him, the other half believe him, and they're like, we don't get it, though. Now, flip over to Revelation 19.
Where is Revelation?
Revelation, if you go to the back cover of your Bible,
yeah,
I'll flip back a couple pages.
All I see are maps.
Revelation chapter 19. The first half is the rejoicing in heaven, the marriage supper between the Lord and his bride, Israel. Most people would say the church. I think they're wrong. Verse 11, rider on a white horse shows up. And what does he do?
Faithful and true, and with justice he judges and goes to war. His eyes are like fiery flame, and there are many diadem crowns on his head. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, I was more just looking for a basic summary of what this rider on a white horse does when he shows up. He shows up and he kills everything. Everything that's left. He shows up and kills everything. Throws the beast and the false prophet from chapter 13 of Revelation into the lake of fire. And then, chapter 20, verse 1, I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding in his hand the key of the bottomless pit, the great chain. He sees the dragon from chapter 12, the ancient serpent, who is the devil and Satan, bound him for 1,000 years, threw him in the pit, shut it, sealed it. So Satan's bound off in this pit. Verse 4 of chapter 20 of Revelation, then I saw thrones, and seated on them were those who had authority to judge. Also I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for the testimony of Jesus, the word of God. They had not worshipped the beast or the image. The rest of the dead came alive. This is the first resurrection. Blessed is the holy. Holy is the one who partakes in the first resurrection. And they will come to life. They will be priests of God and of Christ, and they will reign with him for 1,000 years. That's what I was getting to. Reigning with Christ for 1,000 years. So what do we see Christ doing after his second coming? After he kills everyone. Reigning for 1,000 years, right? Reigning in a kingdom, like on a throne, on earth. Like what the Jews were expecting with the first coming. That didn't happen. Right? So here's the question that I'm setting all this up for. Jesus in his first coming didn't reign on the throne with a kingdom, but he did say, I am, and you will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds, seated with power. And then we get prophecy of his second coming when that actually happens. So, is this passage in Daniel 7... with the Son of Man coming on the clouds, receiving a kingdom, was it fulfilled in the first coming or the second coming?
Second coming?
All right, defend your position.
We just said they were looking for, the Jews were looking for a king to rule, and he hadn't done that and claimed to be God in human form. And he's saying you will see as in future tense. It hasn't happened yet.
Okay, good. So, yeah. He quotes the passage in Daniel 7 in his first coming in the future tense. You will see it happen. All right, so now I'm going to play devil's advocate, come back and say.
Okay.
The people he was talking to, the Sadducees from the first century, how are they going to see it happen? They're dead.
Maybe it wasn't a specific, like you particular people, but you, the nation, the Jews, y'all will see this, you know, like this is a prophecy.
Okay. That's pretty good defense.
They're going to be dead, but, like, you will see.
Okay. Is it bedtime? Okay. Good night.
Bye.
He often talks about them, like, you will see, you know. And obviously, it can't be literally, you know, they'll see it because it hasn't happened. It's prophecy, and he's still in human form. So I would think it would make sense that he was talking, like, the people group.
It is a more general you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm saying, so when after y'all are dead, and a few couple, you know, don't even know how many millennia will happen. Maybe it will be a millennia. Maybe it will be, I don't know. You will, you know, some people will see this happening.
Yeah.
That would just take too long to explain.
That would be how many in our camp, or I say our camp, my camp would defend that position, so I think it's valid. I'm not sure I like it yet, but I haven't come up with a better defense, so...
I just want you guys struggling with this question. Many, many, many Christians would fall. This is the sort of thing where they point to where they say there's this already not yet with the kingdom of God. Like, it's already been established. Christ is ruling from heaven through the church. And he will come back and literally establish it in a more full and real sense later. So it's already here, but it's not yet here. They talk about this already not yet thing. I don't like the already not yet hermeneutic. I think it's a cop-out. But there are a couple passages that I have to deal with. And so, just putting this out there for you guys to chew on.
It's also saying the beast has been killed.
There you go.
And its body thrown in the fire.
Stealing my thunder. Yeah, so.
I was looking for it, and I just couldn't find it until just now.
Right. That happens before the Son of Man comes and gets his kingdom, right? So whoever the little horn is has to have already done his thing on earth and been killed and cast into the lake of fire. Burned with fire. So now, let's...
It says, killed and its body destroyed and thrown into the flame and fire.
Yeah. Let's talk about the fourth beast. So remember the fourth beast. It's got... So this is something... We gotta get real specific here. Look back at the description of the fourth beast, verse 7 of Daniel chapter 7. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, terrifying, dreadful, exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke to pieces, stamped what was left with its feet. Do y'all have a period there?
Yeah. Trampled with its feet. My version says whatever was left.
Whatever was left. Period. But then before the phrase, it was different from all all the beasts before it, and it had 10 horns. Alright. Can get real technical. Try to keep it from that. I'm going to argue that there's a gap of time in between those two sentences. That there is the first iteration of this empire and the second one from which this little horn springs up. And my justification within the text doesn't come through that well in English, but it's in that period. And it's something called a vav disjunctive in Aramaic. Don't need to know that, but... There's minor linguistic justification for that.
So wait, so are you saying this is before the little horn pops up, or are you...
Yes.
That's what you're saying.
Okay. Yeah, there's a gap of time before the 10 horns pop up, even.
Before the 10.
So in the same way that when we looked at the statue, remember the statue had legs of iron and feet of part iron, part clay? And we talked about how there was a justification for saying that there's a gap of time in which we're living between the legs of iron and the feet of part iron, part clay. Same linguistic thing. It was a vav disjunctive. He switched the way he was talking for a little bit. And you can see the exact same thing in the angel's interpretation of it. Verse 23. This is when the angel is explaining the fourth beast. There shall be a fourth kingdom on earth which shall be different from all the other kingdoms, and it shall devour the whole earth, trample it down, break it to pieces. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings shall arise. I don't like this phrase. Sorry? What?
So it's just differentiating. So there's one kingdom that's going to go through and just wipe out everything. And then there's going to be 10 guys. So the beast is created, it goes through, crushes everything, then the 10 horns sprout from the...
Right.
So the 10 horns were already... should have already been there, just not...
Correct. And in both cases, I actually think what Daniel saw was 10 horns coming up. He just didn't say it as clearly. Because if you have the word, it was different from all the beasts that were before it, back in verse 7, so there's this beast... stamped, broken to pieces, everything that was left. And then it says, it was different from all the beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns. The word different there, this is like, this chapter is the only time they ever translate that word different. And every other time this word comes up, it says changed. It was changed
from the beasts that were before it. It became different. So I think there's plenty of justification to say, no, there's this gap of time. Now, why does there need to be a gap of time? Well, because no matter who you pin this last beast on, historically, you have issues with it fitting in the history, right? Some will say it's Greece, and so that's that other interpretation. The bear is Media, or the Medes, the leopard is Persia, and the beast is Greece. And so we're not even looking at Rome, we're not even looking at anything past Greece and this guy named Antiochus IV, Epiphanes. They say he's the one who does all this stuff that's the little horn. Problems with that are there's no identifiable 10 kings, and there's no identifiable 3 kings that Antiochus Epiphanes cuts off before. And so none of this stuff fits with Antiochus Epiphanes. Same thing with Rome. If you say this is clearly Rome, there's no clear 10 kings. The 10th emperor of Rome was Marcus Aurelius, and again, there's no clear
what,
3 kings.
Who cares about what the Bible says?
Yeah.
So,
all of these other things fit the history so perfectly well, and all of these other pieces can be accounted for in a fairly justifiable sense, and then you get to these 10 horns with these 10 kings and this one little horn who cuts off 3 other horns, and it's almost unintelligible. And I think the reason is there's a huge gap of time that Daniel doesn't mention. And we've talked about this before when we interpret prophecy, that lots of times the prophets will talk about the first coming of the Messiah and the second coming of the Messiah in the same sentence. And we, through history, realize, oh, those are two different, he's going to fulfill the first half of that sentence, the first coming, the second half of that sentence, and the second coming. And they just slapped them together because they were speaking prophetically. They didn't distinguish the two. I think something similar is happening here. How do I justify that now? Well,
you don't.
Flip over to Revelation chapter 13.
Man, that book.
Okay. And there's going to be a lot of parallels between Daniel and Revelation. While you're in Revelation chapter 13, I'm going to read the description of the little horn one more time. Remember, it's got 10 horns. He comes up.
Yeah, 10 horns and 7 heads.
That's different.
Spoke great things that seemed greater than his companions. This horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them until the ancient days came. And then further down with the angels describing him, he shall speak words against the Most High, shall wear out the saints of the Most High. He will think to change the times and the laws, and they shall be given into his hands for time, times, and half a time. We talked about that last week, 3.5 years, right? But the court shall sit in judgment, his dominion shall be taken away. All right, now, chapter 13 of Revelation is in the middle of this big vision that Daniel's having. It's like, we talked about this 2 years ago, 3 years ago when we went through Revelation, but just to refresh you. This beast comes up out of the sea, verse 1. Saw a beast rising up out of the sea with 10 horns. FYI, these are the only two places in the Bible where a beast with 10 horns is seen. Daniel 7 and Revelation 13. So the Bible reader goes, huh, maybe we should compare these two. On his head had 10 diadems, on his horns, blasphemous names on his heads. The beast that I saw was like a leopard, its feet were like a bear, its mouth was like a lion's mouth.
We've seen that before.
There's only one other place other than Daniel where that these three animals are even mentioned, and they're nowhere near as clearly mentioned as this. So again, yeah, maybe these two passages should be read in light of each other.
No.
And to it, the dragon gave its power and his throne and great authority. One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but his mortal wound was healed. The whole earth marveled, and they followed the beast and worshipped the dragon, for he had given authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who can fight against it? And he was waging war against the saints, and he was prevailing. The beast was given a mouth, uttering haughty and blasphemous words. You remember the little horn.
So it's
uttering blasphemies against the Most High. Verse 7 of chapter 13. It was allowed to make war with the saints and to conquer them. An authority was given to it over every tribe, every language, and everyone who dwells on the earth, everyone whose name has not been written from the foundations of the earth in the book of life. There's one more thing that I wanted to point out. Where is it? Is why you underline things the first time you read through. Somewhere in here it talks about how it's given authority for 3.5 years worth of months. Again, another clear parallel to the time, times and half a time that the beast, that the newborn is given.
Verse 5?
Verse 5, is that it?
Is that 42 months?
42 months?
Yeah, there you go. And it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. 42 months is 3.5 years.
Wow.
Time, times, and half a time. Verse 25 of Daniel chapter 7. He shall think to change the times of the laws. He will give into his hand, given authority, for time, times, and half a time. 42 months. All of these parallels made me go, okay, pretty darn clear, this is the same character. Right? Whoever this little horn is in Daniel chapter 7 is the same guy as this beast in Daniel chapter 13. You with me?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now... Putting these things together.
So it's not the beast in chapter 7, that's the same as the beast in 13?
You meant to say Revelation 13.
Yeah, no, so little horn in chapter 7 is the same guy as the beast in chapter 13.
So the beasts aren't the same, just the horn and the beast.
Right.
So the horn in Daniel is the beast here.
Yes. Chapter, what we just looked at, Chapter 19 of Revelation, when Christ returns, second coming, very clearly second coming, right? He comes back and kills everything. And at the end of that chapter, end of chapter 19, verse 20, and the beast, from chapter 13,
mm-hmm.
was captured with its false prophet, and in its presence had done all the signs and wonders, deceived everyone, received the mark, all that's described in chapter 13. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire that burns with sulfur. The rest were slain with a sword that came from his mouth that was sitting on the hill. So this is after Christ has returned, he takes the beast, throws it into the lake of fire that burns with sulfur, which lines up perfectly with the end of the courtroom in chapter 7, right? The beast's body is burned.
The beast was killed and its body destroyed and given over to the burning fire.
Yeah. All that happens after the second coming in Revelation. So, here's where it all comes together. Since the beast of chapter 13 is not killed, is not burned with fire until, not dealt with until the second coming of the Christ, that character must not have been on earth yet since the second coming of Christ has not happened. Remember, you follow that logic. He has to be on the earth when the second coming happens for him to be taken and thrown into the lake of fire. And since the second coming hasn't happened, that beast is not here yet. Or at least, not that we know of.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that if the beast from chapter 13 of Revelation is the same as the horn from Daniel chapter 7, the horn from Daniel chapter, there has to be a gap of time somewhere in between the introduction of this first, of the third beast, the leopard from Daniel chapter 7, and the little horn. And so the question is, where is that gap of time? Since you put all that together, you say there has to be a gap of time in there if both of these two are talking about the same character. Where is the gap of time? You go start looking for a linguistic justification for that gap of time, and then we find it right there in the middle of the description where it says, and it was different from the other beasts, and when the interpretation says, as for the ten horns. Everybody see how all that worked out?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Maybe we can find the beast if we just follow bloodlines. Since he said he has the piece of the bear, the piece of the leopard, the piece of the lion.
My Revelation.
Yeah.
I'll let you handle that.
I'm not going to do that. That's too much for it. It sounds like something, someone's a whatever degree would be on. If we just follow these bloodlines, we can find out when the end of time is coming.
So, all that we just argued through is the back page, essentially, of your notes. So you can read through those again and see if that reasoning is justified. So, all that to say, where are you in this text? In Daniel chapter 7, where are you? As in, where are you living? What, where in this timeline do we exist?
We're in the creation of the beast.
Yeah. We're somewhere in between the beast showing up, trampling, and devouring, which I'm saying is Rome, the first iteration of the Roman Empire that, you know, slowly dwindled away. But it was a crushing, devouring empire.
Mm-hmm.
Took over all of Greece, and the coming of this other character, the 10 kings who are going to rise up out of this beast. So somehow, many in my camp will say, it's going to be some sort of revived Roman Empire, since those 10 horns are attached to that beast that devours.
I'm just about to ask you that.
Or it will be someone who I really respect wrote Things to Come, Dwight Pentecost. He says, no, actually, if you really look at it, Rome hasn't actually ended. If you trace the history of Rome, everyone says that it fell and crumbled under the Visigoths, but it just sort of changed forms. Turned into the Holy Roman Empire, which turned into the Roman Catholic Church, which still resides in Italy. So some would say, no, Rome still exists, it's just changed. So they'll say that the 10 kings are going to somehow come out of that. We could get into a lot of these different interpretations of how these 10 kings are going to show up, what they're going to look like, and all that, but I don't put that much. All I'm sure of is I've done the exegesis carefully enough to say, no, I'm pretty confident there's a gap of time. We're living before those 10 kings show up, and there's going to be this guy, the little horn. And so, as we're going through Daniel, this little horn is going to show up at least once more, maybe twice more. So, he's going to crop up again, and we're going to learn a little bit more about him and expand our theology on this guy, what's happening. But the application of this passage, what does this mean for me? Two things. First of all, you're living in the midst of a half-fulfilled prophecy, right? So, as someone who understands the prophecy, you know what's coming.
The guy who's going to blaspheme.
Yeah, so being ready but not too vigilant in that, right? Balancing the idea of, okay, we need to be on the alert. Ready for
he's going to kill Putin.
This stuff to happen.
He's going to kill the guy from China. He's going to kill the guy from, I don't know, some other England.
So yeah, not doing that.
He's going to cut off the three heads. He's going to...
And it's going to... Then it's going to be huge.
It's going to be tremendous.
So balancing being ready for that but not being too exuberant about it. And then also the humble recognition of how does this whole story end? It's going to get real bad for a little while. This little horn is going to get up. He's going to wage war with the Saints, and he's going to win for 3.5 years. It's going to really suck for the people living on Earth at that time, whether you take some sort of rapture view that we're not there, or we are there. We can talk through those things next week. Regardless, it's going to get really bad. How does it end up?
Really, really good.
Really, really good. And that's where the faith comes back to it. Last little thing. Verse 12.
Perfect.
Verse 12 of chapter 7. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season at a time. What do you think that means? Remember when this is happening too, right? After the second coming, the beast is thrown into the lake of fire. What the heck is going on with these other three beasts? Their dominion is taken away, but their lives are preserved. This is after those first beasts has come in and trampled and killed them, right? They've died.
It's the rest of the the four beasts, right? The other three?
Yeah, but the fourth beast came along, he crushed and devoured everything. That was his defining characteristic, right? Nothing was left of them. They died, but they come back to life. Does that remind you of anything?
Only one guy.
And what we're confidently waiting for, right? Mm-hmm. Resurrection. The hope of resurrection.
Are you saying that we're the beast? The other beast? Or what's...
I'm saying that...
That's confusing.
I'm saying that the leaders of those other nations will be resurrected. Nebuchadnezzar, mm-hmm. Darius, we saw both of them come to faith.
But only for a season at a time?
Yeah. I haven't figured that part out yet.
That's...
It's like a zombie movie.
And what I think that is that they're going to get to see the Millennial Kingdom.
But only for a little bit. See what... It's like you thought wrong. You thought you were God. Now I'm going to show you what's real.
Yeah.
And then you're going to go spend the rest of eternity in hell.
Yeah. Or they're going to be... They're going to get to see the Millennial Kingdom and then persevere on. Have to do a word study on season at a time. But what I'm getting at is, even here, in the midst of this passage, we get a glimpse of resurrection promises. That's all throughout the scriptures. That's from the beginning of the story to the end. That's what we're confidently waiting for. That's our hope on this earth, is that by God's grace, we will be resurrected, not by our works. That's the gospel message. By grace, you've been saved through faith. Not of your works. It's purely because God wants to resurrect you that you will be. And it was through Christ's sacrifice on the cross. So everybody feels so totally confident in interpreting Daniel chapter 7 now. You just...
Mm-hmm. Yes. Spell this thing in exactly
reading it.
So next week we're going to do chapter 8. I would highly, highly recommend you at least read it once through before coming, so that you're a little bit familiar with the imagery, because it's another vision. And it relates to the second and third nations, Medo-Persia and Greece. And that one's rock solid. It has to be those two nations because the angel says so.
There we go.
Good.
So that's what we're looking at.
At least something's clear.
Yeah.
This guy looks like something from Osmosis Jones.
Yeah. Which guy?
Yeah.
The bottom right.
With the horn.
Guy that
yeah.
looks like teeth.
Yeah. Yeah, there were lots of... you Google Daniel 7, Beast with 10 Horns, you get a lot of different artistic interpretations.
Yeah.
They're all grumpy, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, angry.
Yeah.
So next week, Daniel chapter 8, the ram and the he-goat. It's a fun little vision. And it gets...